This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The call is simple. Reduce drug demand, cut off the supply of illicit drugs, expand treatment, and strengthen international cooperation. If we take these steps together, we can save the lives of countless people in all corners of the world.
That's U.S. President Donald Trump opening the United Nations General Assembly in New York today. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Ugandan legislator Bobby Wine says the government may be planning to hijack his People Powers Movement slogan. A Kenyan governor is charged with murdering his former girlfriend and her seven-month-old unborn child. And we'll hear from the new U.S. ambassador to South Sudan's embassy. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. Opening the United Nations General Assembly in New York today, U.S. President Donald Trump advocated for the global call to action against the world drug problem. Trump noted a 60% increase in drug-related deaths worldwide in the past 15 years, and he thanked other nations for joining the fight.
The call is simple. Reduce drug demand, cut off the supply of illicit drugs, expand treatment, and strengthen international cooperation. If we take these steps together, we can save the lives of countless people in all corners of the world.
This is Trump's second appearance at the General Assembly. In the past year, he has cut funding to the UN, withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accord and the Iran nuclear deal, and quit UN bodies. Tomorrow, Trump addresses the General Assembly. Other speakers tomorrow include the leaders of Egypt, Nigeria, and the DRC. Well, Ugandan legislator Bobby Wine says the government may be planning to hijack his People Power Movement's slogan by registering it as a political party. Wine, whose real name is Rabachuk Alanyi, says it doesn't matter because the concept is more important than the name. Catherine Namby reports from Kampala.
Bobby Wine, the opposition politician who has become a rallying point for disenfranchised youth, says the slogan People Power Movement is designed to show that power belongs to the people, as enshrined in the Constitution. He says the government's purported plan is trying to undercut the movement.
We are aware of that, and I want to inform them that we are not bothered, because we know this is not about us, this is about all Ugandans. And Ugandans cannot be stopped.
Wine has accused the government of forging evidence to depict people subscribing to his movement as brutal, violent, and chaotic.
The state has so many times tried to put people to come in our midst and throw stones or objects so that the security forces can get justification to reply back to us with bullets. Many times they've been trying to push us in different corners. They want to identify us as a political organization, and yet we are people that just believe in an idea that we believe every Ugandan should believe in, that power is in their hands.
In August, Wine, four other politicians, and some of their supporters were arrested and charged with treason for allegedly throwing stones at President Museveni's motorcade during campaigning in the Arua district. They claim they were tortured in detention. The government has denied the allegation. Last week, Wine came back from the U.S., where he got medical treatment for several injuries. Police deployed heavily to prevent crowds from forming to welcome him. Security officials drove him home, despite his objections. The legislator says he won't be intimidated into giving up his campaign for change.
They might arrest a few of us. They might detain, imprison, or even eliminate some. But ultimately, they cannot kill us all. So it is up to you, Mr. President, to remain with a stiff neck or to yield to the humble call, and indeed the desperate call of all Ugandans, to let them free. People power, our power. Our power, people power.
Museveni, who is 74, has been in power more than 30 years. A large segment of the population supports him and credit him with bringing stability to the country. However, more than 75% of Uganda's population is under the age of 35, and those young voters increasingly are embracing the People Power movement, which has been used to campaign and win a number of elections. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Twelve crew members of a Swiss ship have been taken hostage by pirates who attacked the vessel off the coast of Nigeria. Mossel Shipping said yesterday pirates attacked the MV Glarus with 19 crew on board as it carried wheat from Lagos to Port Harcourt. 12 crew members were taken off the ship and are unaccounted for. The attack is part of a wider trend in maritime piracy. The International Maritime Bureau says kidnapping, robbery, and boat seizures off the Somali coast are at the lowest level in 22 years. Last year, there were only 9 attacks, down from a peak of 237 in 2011. But piracy is on the rise in West Africa, especially off the coast of Nigeria. VOA's Adam Phillips looks at the issue.
Modern piracy in East Africa has its roots in the early 1990s, when Somalia's central government and Coast Guard disappeared. Michael Scott Moore, who detailed his nearly 3 years in captivity by Somali pirates in the book The Desert and the Sea, explains.
It was local governments and local militias actually defending the coastline by sending out small boats of men with guns who would then hold a smallish illegal fishing boat for a day or two and say, you need a license to fish here. And they would demand maybe $50,000 from the owners. And after a day or two, they would go free. And that was just how business got done off Somalia for a long time. But it was when those gangs became more organized and started to capture larger ships, cargo ships, oil tankers, and eventually journalists like me on land, that it divorced itself completely from the fishing problem.
It is U.S. government policy not to negotiate with pirates or terrorist groups, so private sources raised Moore's ransom. But Nairobi-based John Steed of Oceans Beyond Piracy and the Hostage Support Network helped develop a strategy for freeing hostages without rewarding their captors with ransom money.
Piracy is a bit like a business. They have an investor, and the investor puts up money, which enables them to buy boats and engines and weapons. And they go out to sea and capture a ship, and then hopefully there's a return on the money and the investor goes away happy. But when that doesn't happen, these poor guys are being held ashore, the pirates are still running up a debt. And if you don't pay your debts in Somalia, you end up getting killed. So what we tried to do was pay off the debt. It was pretty successful.
Of course, it's better to avoid falling victim to pirates in the first place. And since 2012, the number of ship attacks along East Africa's coast has sharply declined. Steed mostly credits a guide called Best Management Practices for Protection Against Somali Piracy. It's intended for ship operators.
In its basic terms, ships started to sail much further away from Somalia. They started to sail at much higher speeds. And in some degree, that gave them security. But it also became obvious that the pirates were getting a long way out to sea, and therefore they started carrying armed guards on the ships. There was also deployed a number of naval operations, and that's the real reason that piracy off East Africa reduced.
Meanwhile, piracy has sharply spiked in West Africa, especially in the Niger Delta. Nigerian pirates tend to rob ships of oil and other precious cargo rather than pursue ransom. They also tend to be far more violent than Somali pirates and are frequently associated with rebel groups. Stig Harley Hansen teaches international relations at the Norwegian University of Life Sciences and frequently consults on piracy and maritime security issues. He says Nigerian pirates often use politics to justify their crimes.
This is an old tradition where you try to maintain that you have a rebel cause and that you are a rebel group. In reality, over time, the income from illegal activities becomes so high that a lot of the members of these groups actually are there for the money and not because of a cause.
Hansen believes widespread corruption within the police and armed services is also a big factor.
Very often you can buy yourself out of problems if you're a pirate. And there have been some cases where there have been clear indications of cooperation between pirates, the Navy, and also with police forces.
Addressing official corruption economic inequality, and other factors may help reduce piracy. Yet, as long as there is booty to steal and ships and hostages to be nabbed, the pirates are likely to continue their terrible trade. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. A Kenyan governor has been charged with murdering his former girlfriend and her seven-month-old unborn child. 59-year-old Okoth Obado, who was married, denied the charges in court today. Five other people were charged in the case, including two of Obado's assistants. The court ordered Obado detained until a bail hearing tomorrow. 26-year-old Sharon Otieno, a university student, was abducted September 3rd with a journalist she had contacted about the affair. The reporter managed to escape. Otieno's body was found 2 days later, dumped in a forested area. She had been stabbed 8 times. Obado initially denied having an affair with her, but officials say a DNA test showed that he was the father of the unborn baby. His lawyer said the relationship ended in April. Prosecutors said Obado had been unhappy when the student told him that she was pregnant. Well, the South Sudan Embassy in Washington has a new ambassador. Philip Jaden Natana presented his credentials to President Donald Trump last week. Ambassador Jada previously served as South Sudan's ambassador to Eritrea and South Africa. Jada is the third South Sudanese diplomat to head the country's embassy in Washington. Ambassador Jada spoke to my colleague John Tanza about his plans to repair South Sudan's relations with the Trump administration.
I got a chance to briefly, you know, chat with the new assistant secretary for Africa, and then there was a follow-up meeting yesterday in which I met him for about half an hour, and I was still impressed when he gave his speech accepting the post, and he said two important things that really, I think, quite go a long way. One of the things that he said was Africa is at a crossroads, and he knows about it. And being a career diplomat, he's been in Africa, serving in Ethiopia and other countries for quite some time, so he knows the dynamics of the region. And the second thing that he said was that he was going to look at events in Africa through the windshield, not through the rear mirror.
Let's look at what is happening in South Sudan. The reports that we get from South Sudan are not very encouraging right after the warring parties sign a peace agreement. What is happening in Kajukeji? Who is fighting who?
Well, as you know, this agreement, of course, the way that it has been signed and negotiated, there was a lot of pressure, you know, to the negotiating sides. And you know that not everybody or all of these parties signed the agreement in Khartoum, you know, and these groups that didn't sign made it very clear that they are not going to be part of this agreement because they felt that this agreement did not address the grievances that they had. There are going to be people who would want to spoil. There would want people who would want to say, no, this agreement doesn't address us, and they will come. And I think the best thing to look at now is really to look at the enforcement mechanism that should be put in place. And I think if the region, and IGAD especially, is really keen that this agreement should actually hold, then I think they should speed up with deploying the monitors on the ground such that we don't have accusations and counter-accusations. So that
the American people worked very, very much with the people of South Sudan during difficult times. I mean, this is not new to someone like you who has been part of the struggle to independence. And now some of your officials have turned their guns on the United States. Information Minister Michael McQuay has been on record saying U.S. wants to topple the government of President Kiir. Why would you accuse the U.S. of trying to topple your government?
Well, I think the statement that you actually quoted now is from a senior official from the South Sudan, an information minister. And as a politician, you know, I think he's at liberty to make statements. And as you know, as an ambassador, you know, I'm a civil servant, you know. So I think my role is to defend the interests of the government, that's first, but also to promote our relationship with the host country, like when I was in South Africa, and the same thing like I'm here. So I will not be in liberty, you know, to comment on the statement made by Minister Makuei.
Well, let's go back to your role. Your job is to defend the government, as you said right now. And the role of the media is to report on events happening in South Sudan in a very accurate manner. And we've been doing that. Why is the government in Juba hostile to the media?
Tanza, as you, I think my background is also been media, and we have always looked at the media as a mirror that reflects on what is happening in the society. And I think one of the principles for which we fought for during the time of the liberation is freedom of expression, freedom of reporting and media and all of those kind of things, you know. But I think you have been to Juba yourself and you have seen the level of reporting that has happened with some of our colleagues in the media. You know, you've looked at newspapers that always just report stories, but they don't balance, they do cut and paste, they do all kind of things, you know. So I think the biggest problem that we have in South Sudan is really lack of professionalism. And I think what we need now in South Sudan is really just for us to go into dialogue and try to root out those people who don't report accurately.
That's Ambassador Philip Jada Natana, South Sudan's new ambassador to the United States. He spoke with my colleague John Tanza here in our studio last week. The World Health Organization today said Ebola response teams in Beni in the eastern part of the DRC are in lockdown because of militia violence over the weekend. Armed rebel groups in the area launched several attacks on Saturday and killed at least 18 people. The DRC army blamed the fighting on the Allied Democratic Force, but that could not be confirmed. A number of armed groups operate in eastern DRC. Beni is the center of the DRC's 10th Ebola outbreak. It is the first outbreak in the eastern part of the country. There have been 147 confirmed or probable cases of the virus and at least 100 deaths. Dr. Pila Salama, who is the WHO's Deputy Director General for Emergency Preparedness and Response, today also said a confirmed Ebola case in the town of Chioma raises concerns because it is a new area of infection and it borders with Uganda. South Africa's biggest agricultural union will present the government with a plan to keep it from taking land owned by white farmers without payment to give to black people. Their plan includes allocating land to black farmers with the necessary financial support to build the agricultural sector. South Africa's ruling African National Congress, or ANC, says it plans to make a constitutional change to allow it to expropriate land without compensating white farmers. The Agri-SA organization says if this happens, it'll be disastrous. Darren Taylor reports.
The ANC says an amendment to the law is necessary to correct the racial imbalance in land ownership. Almost 25 years after apartheid ended, most big commercial farms still belong to white food producers. Dan Crick is the leader of South Africa's largest agricultural group, Agri-SA, which represents thousands of white and black farmers.
We have to acknowledge the devastating effect of colonialism, the 1913 Land Act, and apartheid on the lives of black people in this country.
Using these policies, racist governments made sure that whites farmed the best soil. Crick says Agri-SA agrees this cannot continue.
The people on the ground are losing patience, and we are all at risk. If their patience run out, then we are all in trouble. That's the political dilemma.
Pockets of poor people have already started invading land, but state security forces have moved fast to quell the incidents. Crick says the political solution to the land question is for white farmers to help to restore the dignity of their black colleagues.
And how are we going to do that? We're going to take hands. I'm extending a hand of friendship from Agri-SA and all the farmers here to government and say we want to partner with you, we want to collaborate, we want to seek consensus, and we want to take this country forward.
He and the leaders of smaller groups representing organized agriculture have signed a declaration taking responsibility for land reform. But in the meantime, says Crick, confusing statements from the ANC about land are fueling economic uncertainty.
That is not good for our economy. It is not good for internal and external investors. We are trapped in a low growth curve and we need to do something about it. We need to instill confidence in the South African economy.
AgriSA says the opposite will happen if the state confiscates white farmers' land. Crick adds that farm seizures will also threaten food security across Southern Africa. He says AgriSA will soon present government with a strategy for organized agriculture to provide land for housing in urban areas, land for industrialization, and land for black farmers.
We need more black farmers on more black farms. And we can do that in a responsible way, in a legal way, in a sustainable way, in a developmental way, without unsettling the balances in South Africa that we so desperately need, without scaring people. We cannot expropriate ourselves out of trouble. We've got to develop ourselves out of trouble.
Make no mistake, says Crick, South Africa is in trouble. Experts blame the rapid fall of the rand and an economic recession partly on the ANC's plan to seize land, and on the fringes of growing inequality and poverty are the radicals, poised to either incite black people to invade land or to urge white farmers to resist. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. On September 26, the United Nations will hold a high-level meeting on tuberculosis with the goal to end the global TB epidemic by 2030. Join us this Tuesday as we discuss the significance of the upcoming UN meeting and look at the global fight against TB. Our guest is Gavin Churchyard, CEO of the Orom Institute in South Africa. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the 2018 UN General Assembly. The theme of this year's debate,
Making the UN Relevant to All People, discussing the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.